So, John 7. The Jewish leaders are quizzing Jesus. Jesus is really starting to gain some momentum. He's been around for a couple years now, teaching different things. They know a lot of the people that followed John the Baptist left John the Baptist and started to follow Jesus because John the Baptist told them to. It wasn't a church split. It was a, hey, everybody, he's the guy you really should follow. And then John the Baptist gets killed, and John the Baptist's followers are kind of scattered and aren't really sure what to do. But at one point before John the Baptist was killed, John the Baptist sent his own followers to ask, who is Jesus? Who is that guy? Is there somebody else coming? And they went to Jesus and they said, is there another one coming? Are you it? And he said, you go tell John everything that you see. The blind see, the lame walk, and the good news is preached to the poor. And they're like, oh, that's it. He's the one. So they go back and they tell John. So now, when John the Baptist was killed, more people started to follow Jesus that hadn't started already. And so now the Jewish leaders are starting to be intimidated. He's not just a teacher now. He's really leading people. And stuff is happening. And throughout John 7 and 8, you can read it in such a way, and as you look at it, the leaders are so caught up in issues and topics and controversies and holding on to their power and holding on to the way things ought to be, the way things have always been, the way things ought to be, that they're completely blind to the reality of truth that's going on right in front of them. John 7 and John 8 are full of all kinds of really weird conversations because Jesus is talking about Jesus. Almost everything Jesus says in 7 and 8 is completely over their heads. And he's just talking, if you aren't open to hearing what Jesus has to say, it sounds like complete gobbledygook nonsense because it's so far out. And if you aren't, if you look at just what the Pharisees say back, it's complete gobbledygook nonsense because they aren't listening to the things that Jesus says. So, here's some examples. In John 7:11, they're looking for him. Where is the man? It's Feast of the Jews. They're watching for him, and everyone's asking. And then John 19, Jesus says, has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me? They respond, you're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you? Well, we've already heard that the Jews are conspiring, that we need to kill Jesus. That's what the Jewish leaders are conspiring to kill him. So when he says, Moses gave you the law, but none of you keeps the law, why are you trying to kill me? He's calling somebody out. And the crowd says, oh, you're demon-possessed. Not you're wrong, but they jump all the way to you're demon-possessed. But then at 25, the people start to talk amongst themselves. This is John 7:25. At some point, some of the people began to speak. Isn't this the man they're trying to kill? But here he is, speaking publicly, and they're not saying a word to him. So the bystanders know that the leaders really don't like Jesus, and they don't like him enough that they're plotting to kill him. And he called them out. But they don't understand why. Why aren't the Jewish leaders speaking out against him? Because here he is talking in public. I love this. This is 26. Here he is speaking publicly. They're not saying a word to him. Have the authorities really concluded that he is the Christ? They're not stopping him. The rabbis aren't stopping him, and they're not accusing him in public. He must really be the Christ, the chosen one. Then verse 27. But we know where this man is from. We we know that he's from Galilee. And when the Christ comes, no one will know where he's from, because the prophecy said that his birthplace and the way that he would be born would be questionable. And these people are so smart that they know exactly where Jesus is from, and so they know that he can't be the Christ. So this is just one little hint of, this happens all through 7 and 8, where the people already know something. We know that when the Messiah comes, he's going to do X, Y, and Z. And you haven't done that, so you must not be the Messiah. They basically say to Jesus. They have all these preconceived ideas, and they just don't... Look, John 7:30, the wall, a little bit of crack in this wall. He's saying things to them, they're arguing, and Jesus says, I know who I came from, I was sent by God. Verse 30, at this they tried to seize him, but no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Somehow they tried to grab Jesus and nobody could. They just couldn't get a hold of him. His time had not yet come. Still many in the crowd put their faith in him. And they said, when the Christ comes, will he do more miraculous signs than this man? So you have this controversy of, there's people that want to arrest him, and they just can't. We don't get a description of what it is. If they couldn't get a grip on him, if they couldn't get through the crowd, if there's a supernatural thing going on where they couldn't bring themselves to do it, something like that. And there's other people watching, and they're like, if we're waiting for somebody else, who else is going to do what this man did? He's fed so many people miraculously. He's walked on water. He's calmed storms. Thunderstorms ceased at his command. Who could be greater than this? We have some friends, just talking about this, we have some friends that were in their house and sitting on their porch, and right there before, we were talking about this last night, right there before their eyes, cars pull up, and on one end of the street, and on the other end of the street, and they face each other, and guys get out of the cars, and they have bats, and they have pipes, and they're coming towards each other. And there's about to be a big brouhaha right there. And our friends stood up and began to sing hymns. And they sung the song, Proclaim the Might of Our God, His Glory Through All the Earth. No evil can stand at the presence and the power of His name. So, our friends, these young men, they're just belting out, singing, praying, immediately, and all the guys that were fighting couldn't move towards each other. They could only move back. And they were frustrated, and they were stuck, and they couldn't go on with their fight. And finally they gave up, and they could all move back, and they all got in their cars, and they drove away. Wow. Yes. So when it says they tried to lay hands on him and they couldn't, that's a real thing. Something happened. An event happened, and it's brought about by the God who doesn't change. He's the same today as he was then. They tried to seize him. No one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. There's another part where they got ready to throw Jesus off a cliff. They were so mad at him. They were all in an uproar. And they were going to throw him off a cliff. And it says he just walked right through the crowd. And nobody could get him. So, knowing that God has that power, knowing that Jesus has that power, makes you appreciate Easter that much more. Because none of that happened on Easter. Right? He died. So they see it, and people begin to believe. The Pharisees and the Jewish leaders send their guard. They have their own army. They have their own military soldier guys. They send them, go get Jesus. Bring him to us. he's been right there in front of them day after day talking, and here they send soldiers to go fetch him. And this is John 7:45. Finally, the temple guards went back to the chief priests. So they come back, they are sent out to get Jesus, they come back empty-handed. Finally, the temple guards went back to the chief priests and Pharisees, who asked them, "Why didn't you bring him in?" "No one ever spoke the way this man does," the guards declared. So they go to arrest him, and they are mesmerized by the words he speaks. Nobody's ever taught like that. And they come back, and their bosses basically say, "You mean he has deceived you also?" The Pharisees retorted. "Has any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed in him?" "No, but this mob that knows nothing of the law, there's a curse on them." Basically, they're saying, "We know more, and we're informed, and we know that he's not the Messiah. Because we know stuff." It says that the Apostle Paul said, "The God of this age has blinded the eyes, darkened the minds of unbelievers so they won't see the truth." And there's a point where people can think that they know something and be totally blind to what is happening right in front of them. And so John tells the story of the gospel, and it's not all exactly in order. That's why sometimes you'll read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you try to line it up with, or you read Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and you try to line it up with John, and it doesn't always fit. Because John is telling things as they relate to one another. Every story that John tells is in comparison, and it's in the context of the story right before it. So as you read through John, just know that it's not an episode. It's not a commercial break, and you come back from the commercial, and a totally different thing is happening. You're stepping from one truth to the next truth. So the very next thing that happens, they're blind because they know so much, and they are not listening to Jesus. You have the woman caught in adultery, where Jesus says, "Whoever hasn't sinned, throw the first stone." I'm skipping over that because I could spend a couple weeks on that. Jesus starts to say at the very end of 7. Wait, I don't want to miss this. At the very end of 7, they want to condemn Jesus. They want to curse him. And Nicodemus, who visited Jesus overnight in John 3, he's a guy that really went to listen to Jesus. Even though he didn't understand, he had a lot of trouble. He's the one that says, "Do we condemn people without having a trial first? Are we just going to kill him? We need to have a trial." And they say to him, "Are you from Galilee too? Look into it. A prophet doesn't come from Galilee." They're not addressing the real thing. They don't say, "You know what? We should have a trial." It's almost like a racist ploy. "Well, of course you say that, because you're from Galilee." Or what? "Are you siding with the Galileans?" Nicodemus isn't siding with the Galileans. He's siding with the law that says, have a trial. Okay. Skip down to John 8. It's still escalating. Pharisees are arguing issues. Where did you come from? Where were you born? Who are you a descendant of? What family are you in? What line are you? Jesus is answering back with riddles. "I'm going to go someplace that you can't follow me." Now, if you were one of his believers, and you were around there, and you heard that, you would want to know, ooh, where is he going? I want to know where he's going and why I can't follow him, because he is so awesome. I want to see what that's all about. If you're one of the Pharisees, he's talking nonsense. What does that even mean, you're going somewhere that I don't know where you're going? There he goes, fucking nonsense again. So Jesus is slowly separating the people that don't want to believe from the people that do want to believe. And he does it all throughout with his parables and riddles and the whole thing. They force the issue, and they keep talking until it escalates in John 8:48. They say, aren't we right in the saying that you're a Samaritan and demon-possessed? A Samaritan is like just a total racial derogatory slam. It's offensive. Every time that they said the word Samaritan, you would spit afterwards to clean your mouth out because that word was in your mouth. You know, kind of like we wash our kids' mouths out with soap when they say a bad word. If you say the word Samaritan, you spit afterwards to get that crud out of your mouth, that word. So they are calling him just a dirty, nasty thing. Again, they're not going to him to see the truth. They're not looking at what is really going on. They're just sticking with their preconceived prejudice. Aren't we right in saying that you're Samaritan and demon-possessed? He says, I'm not possessed by a demon. I honor my Father. You dishonor me. I'm not seeking glory for myself, but there is one who seeks glory for himself, and he is the judge. I tell you the truth, if anyone keeps my words, he will never see death. So right in the middle there, he says, there is one who seeks his own glory, and he's the only one that's worthy of all glory, and that's God the Father. And God deserves glory. He deserves to have glory to himself, and he is the judge. Here even Jesus says, I'm not your judge. But the one that we are really trying to serve and grow closer to and grow in and be children of, he seeks his glory and he's the judge. And speaking of that, I'll tell you the truth. Whoever keeps the words that I say will never see death. Jesus is saying, they'll be with him. They'll be with the one in glory. But they don't pay attention to that. They only hear, oh, you're never going to die. You are demon-possessed. You're unkillable, undeadable. Abraham died. All the prophets died. But you say that if anybody does what you say, they'll never die. They're not listening to what Jesus is saying, right? They're still holding on to it. They're trying. Everything he says, they're going to find something wrong with it, even if it's not even what he's talking about. It escalates a little bit more until finally Jesus drops the bomb on him. This is verse 58. And he says, I tell you the truth, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am. Now, if you cleaned out your mouth after you said Samaritan, your mouth is not worthy of the glory ever. Even if you never said the word Samaritan. Your mouth is never worthy of the glory of saying God's name. And even when they would write this, the scribes and the Pharisees, if they're making a copy of the scripture, and it gets to the part in Exodus where God says to Moses, hold on a minute. You go and you take a shower. You put on all clean clothes. You come back. And you write, I am. I just wrote down God's name. You know what? These clothes I'm wearing right now, I can't just wear these now because I just wrote God's name in these. I gotta go change clothes. They change back into their normal clothes and they come back and they continue to write Exodus. That's how in just amazingly powerful. So Jesus says, in argument about how old he is and how long he's going to live, he says, before Abraham was, I am. I don't even think we can comfort, it's worse than the squirrel getting loose in church on Sunday kind of thing. I mean, just total shock. And At this, they picked up stones. Like, we're not doing a trial. We're not arguing. They picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus hid himself and slipped away from the temple grounds. Like, at that moment, you're going to die. We're going to kill you. You just said this. And it's against Roman law for the Jews to execute the death penalty. They had to get permission. But it's like a riot. It's like a mob. And they're going to kill him because of what he just said. That's a big deal. But what if you're sitting there and you're watching this conversation and you're a believer? And you're like, Jesus, come on. Be the Messiah. Take over. And you know he's the Christ. And you know at any moment he is going to take over and reign. And you're waiting for him. Jesus, do it. Reveal your glory. Next week when they're coming into town, they'll say, Jesus, is this it? Is this the time to reveal your glory? Everybody runs out of their houses. They lay their coats on the street. They're all shouting, yes, he's revealing his glory. So you're sitting there listening to Jesus argue with these knucklehead Pharisees that just don't get it. You couldn't walk. Maybe you were paralyzed for 20 years and you've been healed and you walked there today because you know he's got the power. And you're listening to him talk, and he says, before Abraham was, I am. That would be like, yes, now, do it. That's a big deal. So all of this conversation of Jesus is saying crazy stuff that doesn't seem like it makes sense, he's saying it all so that everybody that believes in him gets taught and knows what's going on. And right there, Jesus not just makes everybody mad, but he also reveals, here's the real truth. I'm going to say it clear to you guys. I am. I am that I am. I'm that guy. Moses talked to me when the bush was on fire. And so you can see why they would want to kill him. Now they really want to kill him. And so they try to trick you. John chapter 9. So the rabbis used to teach that you could pray for somebody that was blind and God might heal them. If they were injured in an accident, if they got an illness, God could heal from a rabbi could heal a person that was blind. But if you were born blind, only the Messiah can heal somebody that's born blind. So, just imagine, you're at the synagogue, and this blind guy comes up, and he asks the rabbi to pray for him, and they had specific prayers for people that were blind, and they recite those, and it doesn't work, and nothing happens, and the rabbi says, well, how long have you been blind? How long have you been blind? Oh, I've been blind since I was born. Oh, only the Messiah can heal somebody that's born blind. That, I mean, yeah, sorry, kid. Sorry, lady. Only the Messiah can heal somebody born blind. If you were blind, and if you were in that small, I mean, there's not going to be very many, but if you were in that group of people that were born blind, every time you heard that, would your heart not leap or be totally downcast because your only hope is the Messiah? Your only hope to ever see is going to be when the Messiah comes. And you don't know if the Messiah is going to come. That's why John 9 is such a big deal. There's a guy born blind, and he's an adult. So he's heard this a lot. He may have heard people get healed from their blindness. We don't know. And so they bring a trap. All right, Jesus, who sinned? Did this guy sin while he was in the womb, basically, before he was born, and so God struck him blind? Or did his parents sin before he was even conceived, and as a curse on his parents, he was born blind? Because this is their thinking. It's because bad things happen to you because you are bad. even if you were bad before you were even born, bad things are going to happen to you. And Jesus turns the whole thing on his head. And he blames God. It is for the glory of God. Chapter 9, verse 3. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. But this happened so that the work of God would be displayed in his life. This is kind of like Joseph. All this bad stuff happened so that God could show off. And then he heals him. He heals him in a really weird way. He doesn't do this a lot in the scriptures. Jesus spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, put it on the man's eyes, go wash in the pool of Siloam. So the men went and washed, and he came home seeing. And I think it was the Sabbath. I don't know. Yes, it was. Verse 14 says it was the Sabbath. All right, so if you make medicine, if you're a pharmacist and you make medicine, your job is to mix medicine together, which is mixing, which Jesus did when he spit and he made, so he did work. So that breaks the Sabbath. So he shouldn't heal that guy. Goes on. That's what the Pharisees think. The other cool thing is how Jesus doesn't heal the guy right there. He puts the mud on the guy's eyes. He says, go find your way to this pool and wash there and you'll be healed. So the guy goes and he's healed and Jesus is nowhere to be found. He doesn't even know what Jesus looks like. He doesn't know, he doesn't know what anybody looks like. He's never seen any human in his life, right? So that begins a controversy. Because if this guy is a guy that was born blind and he just got healed, and we've always taught, us Pharisees have always taught, that only the Messiah could heal a man born blind, then we have to make a decision about whoever healed him. Because he might be the Messiah. According to our own logic, he is the Messiah. So they bring the boy's parents in, they quiz them, they're afraid, they bring him in, they quiz him, he is not afraid. But he says, I don't know if he's the Messiah or not. He's saying, I have no idea about this whole controversy. I don't know about your prejudice. I don't know about your politics. Here's what I know. I was blind my entire life, and this man made it possible for me to see. He's basically saying to them, you guys have to deal with that. Because that, you take whatever controversy you want, here is a fact that cannot be disputed. I have sight. And you know it. And you know I was the guy born blind because I've come up to you before to be prayed for it, and you said you couldn't do it, that only the Messiah could do it. And here I am. And I can see. All through this, I don't think Jesus is mad at the Pharisees at all. I don't think he gets mad until Palm Sunday. Jesus is reaching out to them. He's healed lepers. He sent the lepers to the priests, and he told the lepers, go to the priests and tell them that you're Jews, that got healed of leprosy, and you need to do the ceremony. So the priests would know. Only because they also thought that only a Messiah could heal a Jew of leprosy. Skip down to the end of 10. They still don't believe. They are still holding on to their own ideas. They're not going to the man to really consider him. Go to 10:24. The Jews gathered around him saying, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the Christ, tell us plainly. If you are the Christ, tell us plainly. Because if he can say, I am the Christ, then they'll have room to try him for blasphemy and to show that he doesn't live up to what they think the Christ is, and then they can arrest him. Tell us plainly. Jesus answered, I did tell you, but you did not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. Jesus has already separated them. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. Remember how I said Jesus tells these parables and tells these things to separate the people, to make people forced to make a decision about him. Is he the Christ or is he not? Skip all the way down to let's see, verse 38. If I do it, doing the things his father does, even though you don't believe me, believe the miracles that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I'm in the Father. He's saying, if you don't believe a word I say, at least look at that blind kid. Look at that kid that's dancing. Look at that man. Look at that woman that got her son back from the grave. If you don't believe any of that, believe my works. And then, and I'm not going to talk about it all, John 11, he's like, all right, look, if you didn't believe any of this other stuff, I'm going to bring somebody back from the dead that's been dead for 3 days. And he does that, and you have all of the Lazarus story. Skip to the end of 11, and 11:47. At this point, okay, now he's brought somebody back from the dead. And nobody's done that before. That's Elijah. Elijah did that. But the guy wasn't dead for 3 days. What are we accomplishing? This is verse 47. The chief priests, the Pharisees called a meeting and said, what are we accomplishing? Here's this man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. That's their priority. They don't care that he's bringing people back from life. They don't care if he's the Christ. They want their position, and they want their nation to be what it is. They value their politics and their control of things. They value that more than the truth. Then Caiaphas, not knowing it, says, don't you realize it's better that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish? He means, let's kill Jesus so that the Romans don't come and overthrow our land. But it says in there that he didn't know it, but he was prophesying that one man was going to die so that their sins could be forgiven. And then it says in verse 53, from that day on, they plotted to take his life. So now, this is the meeting of the Sanhedrin. This is like if the city council met, and they're not just deciding, you know, about a law, or we're going to have penguins at the zoo, or whatever. They're deciding, we are going to kill this guy. This guy needs to die. And as we'll find out next week, the more against Jesus they become, the more complicated it gets to kill them. As I was thinking about all this and doing this sermon, I was trying to think of, like, how does this apply to us? And it really does apply very much to us every day, even as we're believers, because there's prejudices that I have, and there's things that I think I know. And since I know this, then God should act this way. That makes me not open to what God might do in a situation. If I see some big gangster black drug dealer on my street, and I think God is so angry at that guy, but then, and this didn't happen, but I'm just saying, if I had a conversation with him and he was genuinely concerned about his daughter being sick, the Bible says that Jesus would heal that daughter. Jesus would love to heal that daughter. But my preconceived racism and my preconceived anger at his crime would prevent me from genuinely praying for that guy's daughter and for him and for hearing his story. So there's a lot of things that we have that we think we know how something is, and Jesus is trying to tell us every day something different. And we need to be open to hear what that different thing is and not be Pharisees. That, I mean, if I write that guy off and I don't want to talk to him because he's a big, scary black guy, I've just said I would rather him die in his sin than for me to learn something new, than for me to learn what Jesus is trying to tell me. And that's what the Pharisees did. They'd rather die than change the way they had their safe little home, their safe little government. So, Father, thank you so much for living such a perfect example that transcends all time, and that the stuff that you did and the way you dealt with the Pharisees then teaches us how you deal with me, the Pharisee, today. And Lord, I want to follow you, and I want to learn from you, and I don't want to hold on to what I think I know. I want to know this guy, Jesus, and I want to learn from you, Lord. So guide us and help us and reveal those things to us this week.